As we approach what some computer scientists have actually said is singularity, and we're getting more and more interconnected with our machines and so on, perhaps it's time for us to say, halt, enough of such stuff. We can't be constantly connected. We need to relax. We need to take time out. Now, one of the websites which actually addresses this particular aspect particularly wonderfully is, of course, Turn Lights On. And we're delighted to feature the founder of Turn Lights On and talk about why we are becoming a nation of screen addicts. It's the fabulous Georgina Jones. How are you, Georgina?
Oh, thank you very much. It's very nice to be called fabulous today.
Well, you are indeed, because I'm looking at the orange sort of line of Turn Lights On and so on, and it's a case of being happy in this side of things. And sometimes, it would seem from this recent survey from Innocent, actually, if we are kept away from our mobile phones, we get unhappy, and that's not good for any of us.
No. And so the research was done for the Innocent Unplugged Festival, which is a festival completely dedicated for 2 days of not having your phone. And that idea to some people is quite, well, through the research, is quite alarming, because people do feel anxious without their phones these days. And because we are a nation of screen addicts, on average 20 weeks of the year we spend in front of a screen.
As someone who's in the educational business, clearly one couldn't actually do one's professional duties these days without the onset of phones and so on. And certainly one sees students consistently working on academic work, or maybe not academic work, actually, with respect to mobiles, phone, etc. But looking at the top 10 tech peeves that this survey's come out, the one which surprised me most was this whole notion of being knocked into someone who is checking their phone while walking. Well, I can kind of go for that point of view, but this whole notion of checking your phone during a date, please don't do that. And of course, emailing a colleague who is in close proximity to you rather than talking to them face to face. These sort of pet peeves have been with us really since, I suppose, the back end of the 20th century. Here we are in the second decade of the 21st century. Is it just getting worse?
I think it is, because we are tending to use these devices much more. We're integrating them more into our lives, and we sort of feel lost without them. And especially, do we need, the question is, and what I speak to people about is, why do we need our phone when we're having dinner? If it is something that, why are we there? We're there to have dinner with a friend, to connect, to find out what's going on. And by putting a phone in the mix, it's saying that I'm not valuing you. I'm not really spending that time and giving you the energy that this deserves. So it's really important to just ask a question. Do I need my phone today? Do I need to be contactable 24 hours a day? Do I need to take my phone to the bedroom with me? A lot of people go to bed with it, wake up with it, and it's just constantly with them.
Well, Georgina, that's another whole relationship exercise we can go into in terms of going to bed with your mobile phone.
That's probably a different show,
yeah. I would have thought so. But the restaurant, of course, we're still in that business where people are taking photographs of their food and every course that they actually eat. And with respect, actually, no matter how wonderful you might be, are we really that interested in having it sort of put on social network media and so on? One of the criticisms that has often been raised with myself about social media in general is that it's such an opportunity to actually sort of show what wonderful times people are actually having, thereby making people who aren't having necessarily that wonderful time just that little bit more worse, really. So it's not good. But you rightly sort of said that there is hopefully light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we talked about obviously the current state of play, and again, if we head down the line that some tech wizards would actually say, where we're going to be actually having nanites put into our cells and systems, etc., will be completely wired. But in betwixt times, there is a festival to actually unplug. And this Innocent Unplug Festival is something which actually sounds as though it's like manna from heaven to actually see.
Yes, and do you know what's really interesting through the research is 51% of people want to disconnect more. So there's a need and a desire there, but I think it's just us creating the environment too. So that's what the festival is all about, is creating an environment where we say, actually, we want you. We don't want your phones. We don't want you to be sort of wired up to something. We want you to just enjoy. I know I was at a Sunday lunch in Cardiff Bay on Sunday, strangely enough, on Sunday lunch, and there was a lady there, and she took a photo of her food, and then she took a photo of the view, and she took a photo. And is she in that moment? Is she really enjoying that moment? Because it's the memory memories we look back at through our lives, not sort of the great photo that we took of the food that we ate on that day. So it's just really making sure that we're enjoying the present moment as best as we can.
Jamie Sturry, the brand activation manager at Innocent, said it's an opportunity for people to get off the grid for a weekend. Mm. Do you think this could actually lead to people thinking, well, actually, we do need, for more productivity, for better work, etc., to actually have more of these downtime scheduled? Because let's face it, even the information technology systems that we tend to use, sometimes they need to be rebooted and reset to calm them down.
Exactly. And we are exactly the same. As I said at the beginning of the interview, we need that non-linear time where we can be creative. There's been lots of studies to show that being highly charged on technology does affect your creativity. And also that calmness. If we feel that we're completely frazzled, it can lead to burnout. But we're valuing the wrong things. In business, we value the fact that somebody replies to the email straight away instead of really just giving people the space. I remember I was working in a corporate environment when they first brought in BlackBerrys, and we thought it was fantastic, but you're always working. And if you work for a global company, you're working 24 hours because there's always emails to check. And yeah, I definitely think that something like Innocent Unplugged is going to be leading the way for other initiatives that can encourage people to just do what we all thrive to do and all crave to do, is connect with one another.
Connect with one another, connect with other human beings, as Georgina Jones would actually say. That's what it's all about. And we'll find out more from Georgina next week. Of course, we look ahead to the Innocent Unplugged Festival. Now, of course,
Sci-Fi London simply wouldn't exist without Louis Savvy. Nor, for that matter, would the Louis Savvy phone link on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Relax and let your mind expand.
I always feel that my mind has expanded, Louis, every time you actually join us on the production. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Evening Edition, unless, of course, you're in Los Angeles, in which case it is, of course, the Morning Edition. Welcome, Louis.
Exactly. Good afternoon, good morning.
You come and join us at an auspicious time because we've already had a mini presentation of part of the Emma Tinson presentation. There's still more to come from that point of view. But Louis, I know that, in fact, we're actually around at the time now where, Claire, I'm going to ask you to take out the envelope. You're going to It's time to take out the envelope.
Uh-oh.
And with Louis Savvy there, I mean, I know is it too strong to say that when I showed up with our Emma Tinson on Friday, you were quite literally gutted?
I was gobsmacked that she wasn't on site.
Not on site, not there, you know. I mean, Mary Dancing, likewise, no Midweek Drive ads are actually there. I had to sort of turn up into Stratford and coordinate it there. We have six, even Sam Stone and David J. Howe actually had to say, no, we can't make Sci-Fi London because they were actually at a Doctor Who event. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
The things come through there. Claire is now going to actually formally hand a white envelope, courtesy of Hannah Brown, of course, as well, to Emma Tinson. And there, inscribed in the whole thing, together with such luminaries as writer Jenny Finch, Ace, Fly Me to the Moon correspondent Rob Nichols, and so on, we'll have some of the key things. Plus, of course, the authentic Sci-Fi London 2016 film brochure, so she can actually be well aware of all the goodies she's missed.
It's like I was there.
Exactly.
It is. Exactly. But had you been there, and had you had the opportunity to, as I was fortunate enough to do myself, see the legendary production, and I say that again, life-changing, life-affirming, slow-burner extraordinaire that was this papier-mâché boulder is actually really heavy. I'll say that again. This giant papier-mâché boulder is actually really heavy. We're speaking to Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens on the show tomorrow because they were obviously our officially designated attendees of the whole thing. I don't think they've actually managed to catch this, but this, if you were into Blake 7 at all, if you had any appreciation of Galaxy Quest or this giant papier-mâché boulder, is actually really heavy. And Emma, you missed last year, of course, Catherine Tate, you know, checked out that whole thing.
I know.
Sci-Fido.
Celebrity hunt, didn't I?
Fabulous Super Bob.
The Fabulous Super Bob.
Exactly. It was brilliant. Yep. I loved that film.
Yep. This time round, of course, you gave up the chance to sit. And why, Louis? Because she's doing her finals and exams. I mean,
I
really
would much rather have come. Sadly,
they
I couldn't.
At least you'll always have a Louis Savvy autograph to cherish. Indeed. In your official card. To work through that. Anyway, Louis, as mentioned in the studio, we've got Hannah Brown, who hopefully will be joining us for next year's Sci-Fi London. Mary Dancy, who again might join us next year. Was very close to joining us this year, but in the end, Mary, it was just too much, really.
I failed at the last hurdle.
Never failed. You know, never give up. Never surrender.
There'll be a 17, don't worry. There'll be a
and
sci-fi
that's what 17. We wanted to know. There will be a Sci-Fi London 2017.
I will be there.
Exactly.
I will nip over
Claire's,
from Kent.
Claire's already booking her place.
I will do.
Claire Margerison.
You put my name on that.
To Sci-Fi London. You know, again, I was just fortunate enough to actually catch the last day of the event. We had the producer of Capsule who was actually there. Quick question, though. The Financial Times article on Pepper the Robot, was that anything to do with your good self, or is that a completely different Financial Times piece?
Well, it was a follow-on, actually. If you, if that was the FT Weekend where they had the editor piece, if you look on page 3, you'll also find the piece about Jetson, which was the robot, which was the AI that wrote a screenplay for our 48-hour film challenge.
Now, there are some people in the studio, Louis, who may not have actually availed themselves of the joy, and I say that again, of the joy of our podcast, the full interview that I did with you outside the theatre in Stratford. Glorious sunshine. It was our British summer, as David J. Howe actually pointed out.
Yep.
But I think Hannah and in particular Claire, but certainly Sam and David and Mary and Emma will appreciate this little story, because I'm as you probably told by my reaction when you revealed this to me, I said, well, that's it then. We might as well hand over to the machines now. It's all
exactly.
over. It's done and dusted. So
exactly.
I'll set the scene, Louis, and as ever, you can deliver it in your consummate style. It's all to do, folks, with the 48-hour science fiction film challenge, where you got 48 hours to actually write a script and develop the whole thing. And there were binary digital shenanigans and computer programming shenanigans are taking place. Louis, the floor is yours. What's happened with this, and why should we be afraid, possibly very afraid?
Right. Well, so 48-hour film challenge, we give the filmmakers the title of the film, a line of dialogue, a prop list, and an optional science idea. They've then got 2 days to make a 5-minute short film. So this year, one of the teams that have taken part quite often over the last 4 or 5 years decided that they would feed those 4 pieces of information into an AI running on an NVIDIA Jetson single chip computer that was running a program called a long short-term memory neural net. So they fed those 4 things in and asked it to write a 5-minute screenplay, and then did what they were told, basically. They made a beautiful looking film, excellent production values, really well shot, beautifully graded. It even had the star of the US comedy Silicon Valley in the film, and it was absolutely compelling and captivating to watch. Made no sense whatsoever because the computer had written it, but it had some really interesting
Louis,
dialogue.
I've read academic work from various undergraduates who exactly the same thing could be applied to them as well.
So that in itself, we thought was proper experimental filmmaking. You know, it wasn't an art film calling itself experimental. It was a proper experiment in filmmaking. So it's, if you want to see it, it's on Sci-Fi London's website. Go to the 48-hour link, and the film is called Sunspring. So that in itself, that we shortlisted it because we thought it was so good to watch and very interesting idea. So it had already beaten, you know, 100 plus human teams to get shortlisted. So we then decided this year, for the first time, we put an audience vote online. We'd allowed people to do a poll and elect their favourite film. So it looked like, from us analysing the results, because we were getting sort of relatively average mid-hundreds, you know, 200 per film, and yet there were these 2 movies that had plus 7,000 votes.
7,000 votes?
Yeah.
Sorry, it was a shock there was coming across, really. 7,000
exactly.
votes.
So we were looking at where these votes are coming from, and one of them, one of the films, no names being mentioned, but one of the films had 3,500 votes coming in from the same Canadian university server. So it all looked a bit suspicious. Looked like someone had written a script to try and cheat. So I then found out that the American filmmakers of Sunspring had gone and told Jetson, they went and told their AI that it looked like someone was cheating. It then wrote its own script and voted for itself 10,000 times an hour until it won. So it went and rigged an election. I mean, and for me, given that this happened on the Wednesday, the day before the London elections and all the assemblies and
it's
police commissions around the country.
You know, it's cutting-edge journalism, Emma. You see
absolutely.
What you missed. You know, it's
can you imagine if you know, because there's been talk about how we engage people with politics, and one thing that's, you know, that's been said is, well, perhaps we should let people vote through Facebook or on their smartphones. And can you imagine? I mean, I'm not worried even about a human being doing it now. I'm worried about an AI going and rigging an election, because we've had it done. So
there are many people who would say Donald Trump is indeed artificial intelligence, but
exactly,
you know,
exactly,
thoughts,
yeah.
Artificial.
But but what I found even more interesting actually was that when we started, we actually then went back and asked Jetson some questions like, what is your film really about, and why did you rig the voting? And then we also asked it what was next for it. So the question typed into the AI was, Jetson, what's next for you? And its answer was, my name is Benjamin.
Yeah.
And at that point, at that point, I understand that the director of the film got in his car and drove to the mountains in California. Not saying that there's anything in it, but, you know, he decided that was it. He was going off-grid for a little while.
My name is Benjamin. Claire.
But then you have to
lovely,
question,
isn't it?
if an AI is then naming itself, does that mean that it's sentient? And does that mean whether you can just flick a switch and turn it off? Because
Don't kill Benjamin.
Exactly.
Are you saying? Kill Benjamin?
No, I'm saying that would be horrific. Like, you can't do that. And I wrote my third year sci-fi essay on about, like, whether sentient AI exists, whether you can kind of class it as a mind. And as soon as something names itself, I don't know what, it kind of draws on the compassion of humans, doesn't it? Because then you would immediately go, don't kill Benjamin. But
yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether it's, you know, whether it's just got a really interesting set of algorithms that are helping it to deliver answers that sound, again, we
anthropomorphize.
Thank you very much.
It's okay.
Exactly what he said.
It's like scratching his nuts in Ice Age.
Yeah, exactly. But we, you know, do we add that human quality to it because it's something that resonates with us? Or, as you say, is it actually something that's become self-aware by giving itself a name and an Old Testament name, to, you know, in that fact, you know, it's all a little bit Lawnmower Man or you know, or Robopocalypse. I don't know if anyone's read that. Daniel Wilson's great book.
Well,
you know, but Skynet. If, you know, in years to come, the piece in the FT was really interesting because it said, if in years to come we're deliberating when robots became, you know, computers became sentient, you know, perhaps we'll hark back to this event, you know, of a robot creating a piece of art, then rigging an election to win, and then giving itself a name, you know.
I'm sensing a kind of Big Blue moment here. I'm thinking, you know, that moment where Bobby Kasparov lost the chess to Big Blue, the computer. That was obviously the 90s. Here we are, 2016, and, well, there we are, algorithms being written.
A bit how.
Mary, are you concerned about this, or would you just say, no, just sing Daisy to it?
AI kind of terrifies me, but I love it at the same time. Damn it, this is so cool, but
Mary isn't actually an AI, she's just a bit off the microphone, actually. That's the reason. So you can actually take hold of the microphone and move it to one side, and then we'll be able to hear you.
Yeah, like the idea that AI could kind of spiral out of control and there's nothing we can do and it could be all apocalypse and all of that, and there's, you know.
Mary, what if it already has?
Who knows?
It could also.
You know, Sam has conversations with Siri.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I do. Well,
yeah. Penny Evans has.
Usually, when I've consumed a lot of wine.
Penny Evans, our Buxton correspondent, has said that she's sort of appreciative of social media because she was able to actually hook up with a composer in Denmark and a lyricist in Australia. But Penny will not have a mobile phone. She's into social media, but a computer is enough for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you tried, talking of Siri, have you tried asking Siri what 0 divided by 0 is?
Have you done that recently, Sam?
I haven't, actually. I usually ask it very personal questions.
Well, I tell you what,
it always comes up with a diversionary answer, doesn't it?
It's worth trying. It's because the first time it may just say to you 0 divided by 0, 0. But if you ask it a few times, it will say, imagine that you had no cookies and no friends. You can't give no cookies to no friends. It doesn't work, does it? And you are sad. It says Cookie Monster is sad because there are no cookies, and you are sad because you have no friends.
You realise, Louis, this is far too close to my personal experience, so it's getting a bit emotional in every sense of the word. I feel
exactly. You need to bring cookies to the next festival. I'm trying to indicate.
I'm going to actually move on to the next little presentation to Emma Tinson, who of course celebrated her birthday yesterday. From the White Bag, we're going to go back in time for this.
We've got a very special present of no cookies.
No. We'll leave that. No, what we have actually done from the time routine is get an authentic 2012 Midweek Drive Morning Edition mug, which celebrates Her Majesty's the Queen's Her Majesty the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. Exactly.
Because I figured, was it made in China?
No, it's actually made in Lincolnshire. But I thought that was because it was a memento of the whole thing. Because that, I believe, was that when you started the degree program? No, it wasn't. It was actually a couple of years, a long time ago. The bottom line is, it was a year after Phil Leonis made his debut on the production. Phil's coming up shortly, so there we are. Splendid stuff. Louis, it's been sensational. Any further questions you want to put to Louis? I mean, apart from the fact that Sci-Fi London was a huge, huge success and will be featuring various directors and writers, etc., over the next few months, of course.
And we're really sorry we couldn't make it, Louis. We really wanted to go.
That's all right. Next time.
Maybe next time. Absolutely. Yeah.
Of course, as Sam may say that, but I actually made the effort and I went there, Louis, and you didn't know. Exactly. I saw you wear that pink shirt.
Exactly.
And I wore it well.
It all went horribly wrong.
You did indeed. So let's go to Emma.
Yeah, I want to know if next year's Sci-Fi London is going to be bigger and better.
Can't it get much bigger and better? I mean, they're already partnering up with the fifth Loco London Comedy Film Festival, etc.
How can it grow further?
Yeah, I think we'll be the same and as good to start with, and then we'll see how we get on from there. How's that?
That works splendidly. Louis, heaps more things to do, including hopefully getting you up to Lincoln as well in the not-too-distant future and chatting to some of our computer folk as we continue on that basis. Interesting choice we're going to give you now in terms of, with those, before we get to the last two questions. I do appreciate, normally this time of the year, we have our Eurovision preview. Okay, yeah. I haven't forgotten it. Yeah. It is happening. It is taking place. I feel as though, obviously, with other agendas and items coming into place there, we could be heading into all sorts of other wondrous things. So we can actually offer you Joe and Jake with You're Not Alone. I have to say, without prejudicing anybody here in a sort of EasyJet or way, this is probably the worst ever entry I've ever heard.
I thought you liked the one last year.
Yeah, last year, fine. And normally I can find a lot of positive things to say about this.
Was that the English one?
Yes, but this one, Joe and Jake, You're Not Alone.
I've
actually
heard this
one.
Is that the UK's entry?
Yeah, it is. So, it looks as though, Louis, they're going to go for the Eurovision sort of piece. So,
I don't mind it, actually. Yeah. I'm a massive Eurovision Song Contest fan. Yeah. I watch it every year.
It is a sensation.
And we actually have our own alternative point scoring system, which involves, you know, whether or not you can tell the male singer's religion, or whether you can, use of unnecessary weaponry, key changes, all of that kind of stuff. We score all of those things. And in fact, 2 years in a row, we predicted the winner with the Ukrainian Warriors song and Lordi. In fact,
yeah, but you're talking about the greats there. I mean, Lordi, you're talking about the classical greats
of chainsaws.
Classical routines from that point of view.
Exactly. So this, I mean, I agree that the British entry every year, I think we're a bit too safe. It would be nice if we had a little bit more Bucks Fizz fun going on.
Yeah, rip off the skirts. Rip off the skirts now. Go for that whole process. A little final word on AI from Penny Evans. Sounds well creepy, she says. AI is very dangerous as it's humans that have created the computers in the first place. Unless we teach an AI love and kindness, we are screwed. By the way, she also asks, have you guys seen the E4 series Humans?
Yes. And you should try and track down the original. You should try and track down the original show, which is called Real Humans. It's a Swedish television program. And it's much better, actually, than the Channel 4 one, which I really enjoyed. But it's much more interesting, the Swedish original series.
And, of course, Sweden had lots of good Eurovision entries as well. I mean, people may like this. I mean, in the studio, Emma, have you heard Joe and Jake with You're Not Alone?
I haven't had the delight yet, but I'm
Claire?
Sure about
that. No, I haven't, but Eurovision was once held in Harrogate, so that's a little fun fact.
No way.
The conference centre. Oh, way. Yeah. Conference centre.
Exactly.
Very best, Claire. Harrogate, Eurovision, Harwich. It's all going to work together.
I haven't heard it yet, but I haven't heard good things from the people who have heard.
No, I mean, I'm just embarrassed. I really am. I mean, even Scooch, I thought, had more quality. And that's good. David?
I haven't heard it. I mean, Telos publishes a range of books all on Eurovision Song Contest, and so I'm sure we'll get to cover this
when we come
around to the 20...
In fact, I'm disappointed, you haven't brought along your Telos Eurovision Song Contest books today, actually.
Oh, well.
I thought the Stone Tapes would be nothing but Eurovision.
Oh, actually, yes.
What do we get, Louis? We get 500 editions of Doctor Who magazine.
That's, we do.
It's
going to be great.
It'll be on tomorrow night if you wish to tune in, Thursday, and then available as a podcast. But Sam, Eurovision?
No, not heard it.
I'm
usually very disappointed
Mary,
by everything.
I've
not heard it either.
Okay. All right, well, last two questions for Louis, please. Claire?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have.
Fabulous, Ian. Will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, please.
Graham Harper, I think, has been so devastated by the fact that we're playing Eurovision as opposed to talking about his BAFTA award, he's still actually driving along.
Us.
So to pave the way to get us over to Los Angeles and Phil Leaders. By the way, any message you'd like us to send to you? You might be listening, Louis, at this time, because he's finished off the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. He's had his visit to the Frank Lloyd Wright building. So what would you like to share with us? Because Louis, at the end of the day, no Louis Savvy, no Phil Leaders regularly contributing to the Midweek Drive.
You can tell him to hurry up and finish The Truth Is Out There too, and get it to the festival for next year.
Exactly. Emma, of course, is still holding on to Truth Is Out There 1. You asked the second question there. Did we say, is he coming back? We did. Good. Excellent.
And it's something that I've never known. Oh,
Joe and Jake, You're Not Alone. Well, obviously Joe isn't alone because he's got Jake, and Jake isn't alone because he's got Joe, which is wonderful. And that will be the, it is the British entry into the Eurovision Song Contest for 2016. It's the third time I've heard it, and it gets progressively worse. I don't want to... I mean, Emma, you're...
I mean, I thought it sounded very One Direction-y, but...
But no direction-y, really.
Yeah, right. I'm not really a fan of them either,
Okay. Hannah?
Well, I don't think it's the worst thing we've ever put forward, but then that's not completely saying something.
That good, are we?
I think last year we were third from bottom, but we did beat France and Germany, so that was the only class
I took.
No one likes us. No, that is true.
Oh, don't be so negative, Emma. You know, Claire.
I thought it was, there's good cheese and there's bad cheese, and I thought that was bad cheese.
It was camembert. I thought camembert.
Yeah.
It was Sam.
It's very meh, like most pop music, to be
honest.
Meh,
camembert.
Yeah.
So, what was David J.
Well, I hope they'll be very happy together.
Well, I suppose we can wish for small mercies. Maybe they can. Maybe they are. Maybe they're artificial intelligence. It could have been written by a machine. Mary Dancy.
They did sound a little bit like autotune-y, I suppose. Like, I didn't feel much passion.
It was very autotune.
Yeah.
10:30 a.m. in LA can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
And just in case you're wondering, our Hawaiian correspondent will be on tomorrow morning because it gets to 9 p.m. in Hawaii when it's sort of 8 a.m. in British time. So, Phil Leonis, welcome to the official show in which we can say, yes, we have been celebrating the 21st annual celebration of Emma Tinson, or as you'd like to say...
To many people, the letters E.T. signify phoning home, early Drew Barrymore, or cycling over the moon. For Midweek Drive aficionados, E.T. will always be the Surrey legend that is Emma Tinson.
Yay! And Phil, just in case, because I know you're going to think, is he just going to talk for the next 20 minutes and not give me a chance to actually get anything in? No, don't worry, I'm not David J. Howe. Sorry, David. I know. It's outrageous. But you'd be pleased to know that after a gap of a good few years where we've been Hannah-less on the show, yes, we do have a Hannah that's returned. It's not Hannah O'Brien, but it gives us an opportunity to play this.
Hi. This is filmmaker Phil Leonis.
And this is actress Lily Holloman.
If we've learned anything from all of our travels and adventures,
it's that Hannah O'Brien is a snickerdoodle.
She's also
the Rookie of the Year
on Siren FM's Midweek Drive.
She's living in Gloucester now. But moving on, we do have Hannah Brown. Phil, it's over to you. Hopefully you've caught part of the show. You know the six fabulous folk are in the studios, keenly awaiting your dulcet words.
Well, looking at the clock on the wall, it seems like we have just enough time for one more message from Penny Evans, and then a number between 1 and 22.
Oh, Phil.
Why did David Howe get thrown under the bus? For talking so, you know, Dave, you forget that David Howe and I sat down together along with Sam, along with Dean, for a lovely conversation on Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and it was free flowing. It went back and forth. There was no domination at all, Alex Lefchuk. How dare you? How dare you? Let me ask you this. You know, David brought up the idea of using Google Maps for authenticity and geographically speaking when writing fiction. Let me ask you, apropos of that, Alex, Hawaiian correspondent or correspondent in Hawaii? Because there's a big difference.
Is the
correspondent genuinely Hawaiian?
No, he was born in Los Angeles.
No.
As well, you know.
Well, there you are. There you go. And, of course, very offended that I was not asked to weigh in on the Eurovision. I mean, granted, I'm not from the UK, so I guess I have no... Or Europe. So I have no dog in the fight other than to point out if Norway has an entry, then there's your winner. But let me just point out about that selection, the UK selection this year to the Eurovision Song Contest. That band, their name is Benjamin.
Oh, gosh. That's controversial.
Oh, my goodness.
Getting worried.
I will now be going off grid. And that's the only explanation of how that's your entry, is that the algorithm has been voting 10,000 times an hour. That's really the... wow, it got really scary and creepy all of a sudden on this show, didn't it?
If you want to vote for something decent, you could vote for Podcast of the Year with respect to the Stone Tapes, which is... have we sorted that one out then, basically, in terms of nominations?
We've no idea at the moment.
No idea.
I need to talk to you.
All right. Well, that's
they've asked for an extract.
Yeah.
That's all we
good.
Know at the moment.
It's Phil Leonis' slot. Let him do with it as he feels.
Yes.
Oh, no. You know, this... we started year 10 of our weekly podcast, and on it this week, we were talking about how we hope by year 20 we will have a different name to call it other than a podcast. I mean, iPods aren't even manufactured anymore. It's a technology that doesn't exist. So why do we still call it podcasts for such a brief period of time? Were these things downloaded directly to iPods, and that's how people listen to them? So what would be a more appropriate, and I bring this up because if anyone's going to come up with an answer for this, it would be David and Sam. please come up with a name for the technology that actually fits what it is.
Okay, so
but don't ask Siri over and over again, because gosh knows we can't stand any more depression in our lives.
Sam, an alternate name.
They
for
don't
podcast.
Have to do it now. By the way, I don't want to put pressure on.
I'm going to think on it, but I bet David's got something in there, something brewing already.
I was just going to say that, you know, because I'm actually not particularly technologically, I never thought it was called podcast because it went to iPods. That never occurred to me. I thought it was podcast because it's like a podule. It's like a self-contained thing.
David, called podcast, as I frequently said to various students, because it was an acronym for portable on-demand audio.
Oh, is portable on demand. I didn't know that either.
That's why iPod
sounds genuine.
It is still portable. It's still on demand. Thank you, Emma.
It still works, then.
So there's still podcasts, so Chill Pack Hollywood
portable?
Hour. It's okay.
But we still talk about using the Hoover, even though Hoover may not even have made the vacuum cleaner we're using. We talk about using Sellotape when the sticky tape we're using may not even be Sellotape. I don't know. Podcast.
Now, when you
fine.
Say Hoover and vacuum, you mean the thing that the cleaning woman uses?
Yes.
Okay. That was just me pretending to be an elitist and out of touch with the
I know, Phil.
Name,
you have somebody
my
to
name.
Actually do your
Wait
cleaning.
A minute. Wait for it. Wait for it. Because my name is Benjamin. See, you walked all over it,
I
Alex.
I did. It's been a long day. Seriously. You know, you don't believe... You know, it's the fallback from Sci-Fi London, and this giant papier-mâché boulder is actually really heavy.
This has been such a great show. Let me say this. First of all, you know, so many people that I love so much, like Sam and David and Louis, and yourself, of course. But so very exciting. It's
so
like
no mention for you, Emma. Sorry.
With really good friends. Okay. Boy, you got to go to the negative. I mean, are you authoring series answers, Alex? Because you're going to the negative so often. This idea of using, Google to get, I don't know, the details when writing fiction is something that I hadn't really put it into words before. But, I'm writing a couple of films that are set here in Los Angeles, where I live. And one of the things that I'm really trying to do, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but I'm trying to make these screenplays be geographically realistic. I feel like I want to get the details right so that people can believe the fiction better. And it's so difficult to do it in Los Angeles because you're bucking against a 100-year-old wave, where the tradition in this town, which, you know, we were making movies here for decades before a movie was actually ever set here. It was the 1940s before there was a movie set in Los Angeles. And so Los Angeles was always a stand-in for other locales. And as a result, the tradition was you take a location, you lie about what it is, because it's supposed to be set somewhere else in the world. Then when movies started being set here, they kept doing that. They kept lying about what the location was, lying about the geography. To this day, you'll see a contemporary movie or television show shot in Los Angeles, set in Los Angeles. They'll exit a building, or they'll enter a building in downtown, and when they exit that same building, they're out by the beach. And it has had a peculiar effect on the psychology of this city that hasn't honored and preserved so much of its important spaces, so much of its important buildings, because we've all sort of been ingrained with, its main function is to serve as something else anyway, in a way that we would never do if we went anywhere else in the world. I don't know if that was interesting, but I had to tell you that this has been so much on my mind, and it was exciting when David brought it up. So anyway,
I think it's really interesting, Phil. Because obviously David and I talk a lot about this sort of thing when I'm writing stuff and he's looking at it and reading it. He's always pinning me down to the geography of things. So I think actually what you're doing is really interesting and brilliant, because you're absolutely right. We all have no sense of where things really are on TV these days. It's all made up.
Yeah, and if you feel rooted, the more the writer, the more the filmmaker can root it in a geographic reality, just like with characters, right? The more you can, no matter how outlandish the premise, no matter how otherworldly the premise, the more more that's in it that is recognizably human, that contains details we can relate to, then the more willing an audience is going to be to suspend disbelief. And so I think it's important and it's exciting.
And it does make it more believable, definitely.
Yeah, and I feel the deeper the connection I have then, not only to the piece that I'm working on, but also to the place where I'm setting it, which is exciting. Although not so much so that I'll get off my mobile phone, of course.
Let's open this up a bit. Hannah, thoughts on what you've just heard in terms of do you get concerned about when you're watching, I don't know, Harry Potter, or in terms of whether it's real or whatever?
Oh, interesting thing about Harry Potter, platform that you can't, between platforms 9 and 10, to get platform 9 and 3 quarters, there isn't the wall, so that's not even in the right place. Yeah. They had to move it in the films.
The wall is not in the right place.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but
actually
they've got a little fake monument to platform 9 and 3 quarters, but it's not anywhere near 9 or 10. It's up near 3.
Possibly an alternate dimension. Claire, do you get concerned about place, location?
It's strange because when I'm reading or watching something, I become so immersed in it that it doesn't really cross my mind. But then you have, like, obviously with fan culture, people want to go see these places. People want to experience where things are set and kind of fully immerse themselves outside of the experience of reading or watching something. So, like with the 9 3/4, you've got that, or you might want to go see where Harry Potter was filmed, or go. I've been on the Hogwarts Express at the York Railway Museum before. Like, people just love doing that sort of thing.
Well, for instance, in the Finny Foot Affair episode of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which starred a young Kurt Russell, I thought that was set genuinely in Norway. Perhaps not. Over to Mary Dancy. Location?
I always quite like it when it seems a bit more authentic and a bit more realistic and stuff. So I think it's nice when you can place yourself in it and you're like, right, okay, I know where. So a bit like Google Maps in a way.
Are you really in Los Angeles at this moment in time then, Phil?
Oh, I am, although 2 weeks hence, when you speak to me, I'll be on the road to Knoxville, Tennessee. I'll probably be in Arkansas, but and I'll have stories to tell you. But and part of what I'm doing is going to be shooting. Please pass this along to Louis. I'll be shooting pieces for part two of The Truth Is Out There. But there is a story related to us making The Truth Is Out There when we went to Berlin. That strikes at this what we're talking about. We went to visit Checkpoint Charlie, not really for the purposes of shooting, just because, you know, it's one of those things. Not only its importance in, of course, our actual history, but in Cold War fiction, in espionage fiction, right? Checkpoint Charlie. So we went to visit it, and not Siri, but whatever the demanding voice of the navigation systems were, both in German, which really is terrifying to be yelled at by your navigation system in German, and also in English. In all our cars, in our little motorcade, we kept going around in circles and circles and circles in the wrong place because there was no Checkpoint Charlie there. But the navigation systems kept telling you, nope, you just passed it. Turn around. Go back. And yet, you know, our human guides were telling us, you're several blocks away. And in researching it, what we found out was the dirty little secret that when you visit Checkpoint Charlie, you're not actually visiting the real Checkpoint Charlie. They had the booth and the gates moved to an area that was easier to build out for tourism, for gift shops and this, because the actual Checkpoint Charlie didn't have the accoutrements necessary to be able to market it as a tourist attraction.
Got to allow for the fact that, you know, David Hasselhoff, when he performed on the Berlin Wall, you know, clearly responsible with Kit, of course, from Knight Rider, for the reunification of Germany, and of course, you know, allowing for Tom Hanks to actually get various sort of photo shoots in there as well. But we're digressing, because Phil, it's up to you to formally help me. Phil, help me, Obi-Wan. In presenting Emma Tinson with her official white bag, with the final sort of remnants of what we actually put together, because I tried to think very hard about this, and I thought, well, we're going to have something to actually sort of think of me as she sort of heads off into the wild blue cosmos in all sorts of ways, etc. So, Phil, would you like to say, cue me in on this? I'm in your hands, Mr. Director.
No, because I don't ever want to say goodbye to Emma.
I may come back now and again.
Next week, Jojo Orton's back on
Emma,
the show.
Emma, honestly, Emma, don't. Leave and don't look back. I know you're always welcome. You're always welcome, but you've got so much going for you, you don't need to come back. Go. Aww. Go out there, change the
world. I'll miss you, though.
Jodie Orton's coming back next week. Just thought I'd drop that in there. She was with us on Sci-Fi Day. So, right, okay, well, I'm going to have to lift the white bag up, pass it over, and there we are, your official call, combination of various things. Whether it's up to Mary Dancy's standards or previous birthday celebrations, I don't know. It's all sorted through the, but, you know, their dancers. So, there you are.
Thank you.
You've got a miniature little solo there, so you can describe it for the benefit of the listener or for
I've got a little Yoda. Oh my gosh, he talks. Does he talk?
And that is the whole message, really. Judge me by my size.
My own little Alex. Oh, yeah. Thank you. So,
there you have it. David, anything you'd like to say to Phil? Apart from life, the universe continues, and it's high time he actually did a movie version of any of Sam Stone's novels.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we need all of those things. I was thinking of something just then, and it's immediately, I've seen that little Yoda has immediately thrust it
had
from
to hold it back to the end.
Yeah,
had to hold
from
it back
my
to
mind.
The end.
Oh,
do the photo shoot
me.
In the morning, Anne. I'll bring
you
along then.
You were talking about film locations. I mean, the one that I actually really like is, I think it's the first Men in Black film. That's all filmed in New York, or at least mostly filmed in New York, as far as I know. And when I visited New York, it was lovely to actually see, you can actually see so much of the locations from the film. It was just tremendous. And,
oh yeah, how about building delightful set pieces based on an actual working knowledge of the area where you're going to be filming it? The chase at the Guggenheim, for example, right? I mean, how amazing is that? It's so much better because they use the real geography than it would have been if they tried to invent a chase sequence.
That's absolutely right. And I'm thinking as well, Phil, of when I visited the observatory in Los Angeles and recognizing all the places that Terminator was done up around there.
He's not going to help.
Correct.
You.
It was tremendous.
He's not going to tell you which observatory it is because he's just going to hold back.
Oh, our brain's gone dead.
James Dean was there.
There's only one observatory in Los Angeles.
On the top of the hill.
On top of the hill, you know, that big place.
Mm. It's not a Lowell observatory, obviously. Because
no, it's not the Lowell observatory.
He won't help you at all. It's okay. You see that sort of 10 years of Chilpack Hollywood podcasts, treats galore. The X marks the spot in every sense of the word. But now it's time for Hannah. He hasn't commented or spoken to you at all, Hannah. I'm sorry, it's not really personal. Okay. Hannah, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Dearness, who has also probably never been to Harwich?
Well, nobody has. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Yes, I wish we had more time. I really do. I always might say that, but this time I actually mean it. I wish we had more time.
Wait, that means you don't normally mean it?
No, I sometimes I exaggerate.
keep going, Hannah, keep going.
So will you be joining us again soon?
Next week I will have Lily Holloman sitting in for me, and then 2 weeks hence I will be joining you somewhere in Arkansas, in the south of the United States.
Our last show.
Well, for a time, but life will always continue in its own merry little way. Tomorrow morning, of course, we've got Georgina Jones probably returning again. Dr. Linda Papadopoulos will talk about how to cope with a broken heart. See what we did there. PJ Buck live from Hawaii. Richard Fitzwilliams on Son of Saul. And Florence Foster Jenkins, Ian Lennox, coping with possible relegation. Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore reviewing the London Film Festival for science fiction fans. The Sci-Fi Film Festival scenario. Possibly William Sitwell. And we'll be saying a quick hello to an exhibitor at the upcoming Nottinghamshire County Show. Thanks in the studio to Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Mary Dancy, Emma Tinson, Claire Margerison, Hannah Brown, and Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Tara Bennett, William Coles, Louis Savvy, and Phil Leonis. That's it. We're out of here. Can we all say farewell? Auf Wiedersehen, sayonara, das Verdania. Trying to get all the sort of as one of you. Otherwise, goodbye after 1, 2, 3.
Bye.
Thank you, Alex.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.